We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/hackitout. Just go to Indeed.com/hackitout right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the Hack It Out Golf podcast. Indeed.com/hackitout. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Ultimate Guide to Gaining Distance comes back at you this week with the downswing episode. We're now trying to make a downswing, Lou and Greg. We're trying to hit the ball. And we want to hit it hard. We want to send it far. What should we be doing? I imagine your downswing is pretty fluid, Greg. And I imagine you haven't got many thoughts. If you're thinking about your downswing, you're probably struggling, I'm guessing, or not.
When I'm doing my technique stuff, I would say I concentrate mainly on takeaway and backswing.
Yeah,
and let the downswing just happen.
Yeah, which we'll talk about some of that. Yeah. Definitely. I like that. I always think if you're thinking of downswing, then you're trying to force something. It's a panic for people, but we'll talk about that. Lou, the downswing is the bit where the club starts coming back down. You probably don't know what you've done. Like, it's just a blur, isn't it, for you? What's going on there?
It's a blur. You've seen my downswing before. You know what it used to look like.
Your downswing was a marvel.
It defied physics, I'll say that much.
It was one of those downswings where a student sends you it, and when you are just around in your business amongst other golf people, you go, guys, come and look at this one.
Oh, look at this one. This guy's no chance.
Defies the laws of physics. Yeah, the way I could dump it back under and reroute that club down at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was actually pretty impressive.
It was. It was one of those swings as soon as another pro started to say, oh, I had this lesson the other day, and you'd stop them and go, just look at this one right here. And then
I've had a few instructors tell me, like, if you stopped your swing halfway down and you had people guess your handicap, they would guess 30, 35, 40.
Yeah, you would be struggling to, yeah, absolutely. But you can do
which
that.
Which makes
to be,
me...
Go on, make
which
you up.
Makes me which makes me a really good partner in money matches, because they see
hustle.
They see that swing from a distance and they're like, this guy, he's not going to be able to do anything out there.
I would
dazzle them.
I thought you were about to say it makes me one of the greatest athletes of all time.
It's close.
In your defense, Lou, and anyone can do this, if you stop Phil Mickelson's downswing in certain spots and took Phil Mickelson away, as in you made it a neutral human being that no one knew it was, you would struggle to get his handicap.
That nearly hits his left shoulder on the way down, Mark. It's unreal.
Joe Mayo did a talk once that I was talking at. Joe Mayo, who's sadly not online much chatting, a great coach, saying that he reckons Phil Mickelson was one of the greatest athletes ever in golf and still is. Because you have to be so good to hit it from where he hits it from. Lots of pros would struggle. They would be worse players.
There's no way you could, Greg, swing the club like me and make contact.
I feel like there's a video coming my way in text here very soon.
I try not to let that one get out. Swing would ruin me.
You got to be careful which ones you send me sometimes. I might post that.
So let's talk about some problems that we see in the downswing that are stopping people creating the energy or getting the energy out of the movements that they're putting in. One of the biggest problems with the downswing is that people don't get the backswing in order. And if you haven't checked out our backswing issue, I would check it out, episode, because it's got lots of the answers to how to get your downswing to work. As Greg has stated earlier, and I would agree, if you can fix someone's backswing, which is often more deliberate, slower, less reactional, and then the downswing falls into place, you're winning with a student. If you're having to put downswing moves in, you're now competing with split seconds, which lots of golfers are going to struggle to manipulate. There are downswing faults that can work. I'm not saying there isn't, but the issue with the downswing is that they've not put themselves in a good place on the backswing. Most common issue, as we've said in the backswing episode, so check that one out after you've listened to this one, is people are starting the backswing, amateurs, from a swayed over away from the target position. So as a right-hander onto the right, a stood up position. So they've rotated, but maybe their flat shoulder turns, which has stood them up. And then from there, they then rotate hard of it. They've got a downswing feeling of turning and getting hit through, and they rotate through. And now we've got real big power leaks that you'll understand more, again, if you listen to the first episode, which is the power leaks episode, because you're hitting down, you're hitting across, you've probably got a face open to a path, your strike's going to be hard, and that's just going to leak so much power. So getting that backswing in order is key. When you start measuring, guys, you'll be amazed how early the incentive of the downswing starts. So I've got a question for you, right? And this is a fun question, but so don't, there's no answer to this, but anyway, it's a question. I stopped giving you the answer before I've asked it. When does the backswing stop and the downswing start?
You go, Lou.
Yeah.
When does the backswing start?
No, when does the backswing stop and the downswing start?
I guess it depends on what I would answer that maybe a couple different ways.
Yeah, you need to, because there is,
like,
see,
so
where I'm
with,
going.
Yeah,
like with parts of your body, you know, your arms and your hands and things are still going back, and your body's starting to the downswing already.
Yeah.
And so if we're just strictly talking the club, it's at the transition point. That's when it's changing, but your body should already be starting the downswing before any of that stuff is happening. So did I answer that in a way that made sense?
Totally. And it's the okay. correct answer. If people say my downswing starts here, I often think, well, what part of your downswing? And the fact that you think there's a definitive answer, the best answer you gave is that we can answer this in lots of ways. If you have coaches like geeky coach discussions, it's something you've got to establish before the conversation starts. Otherwise, what are we talking about? No one even knows when they're saying backswing and downswing. No one knows. You've got to establish what are we calling the top of the backswing. On my Swing Catalyst software,
I got to interrupt. This is one of those. You always give me a hard time about my politically correct answers. This is one time where my politically correct answer is a home run. I always say, you know, there's probably a few ways we can answer that just to cover all my bases.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were just doing your standard answer to everything.
I'm doing my
Sorry.
Bit. It's my bit. Sorry.
Yeah. We're going to build a little statue. Well done, Lou. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely. But on the Swing Catalyst software, you have these three tabs. So takeaway, so start of the swing, top of the backswing, and then impact. And from those three tabs, the data that you get from the plate, you can relate it to different positions of the swing. So when there's a peak in a graph, you can see how it relates to the line you've drawn of impact or top of the backswing. So I would generally try and put the top of the backswing move, the tab, when the club is changing direction. And as you move this tab, because I've got high-speed cameras, so you get lots of frames, you think, cool, this is amazing, because that club's still going back, but the pressure's gone because I've got the grass. I can see they're already moving. The hips have gone ages ago. Like, we're calling this the back top of the backswing, but I always say to students, the more you can blur the line between top of the backswing and downswing, the better golfer you are. If you've got a distinct awareness of when the backswing ends and the downswing starts, they're often the people that sway over onto the right, not pause, but it's a semi-pause, and then sway over onto the left, because they do have a distinct backwards and forward movement. The world's best, the strongest golfers, the people who did it a long way, it's a jumble, it's a mix, and people do it in different orders. But what they don't do is just shove everything on the way back and everything on the way down. Downswing starts at different times for lots of different people. Lou?
There's been some pros in the past that legitimately stopped and paused at the top.
Yeah.
How were they? I've tried that before. That's impossible for me. I can't do that.
They weren't able
to do that.
Did they?
Yeah, well, you've got Thingy does it, doesn't he? The Wayne Grady did that. Jackson player. Yeah, Wayne Grady did do that.
Yeah.
Is he still doing it?
I don't know if Wayne plays a lot in current times, but yeah, it's Roger Mackay was another Australian who played the Japanese.
Hideki
too.
He was doing it.
Hideki. Yeah, Hideki does it.
Does he still do it? Does Hideki still do it?
No, he's kind not of as much, phased
yeah.
it out.
Yeah, I didn't
freaked
think
me
he
out
was.
When I first saw that too. Yeah. I was like, that's wild. Pretty strong guy.
He is powerful.
Yeah, but I'd love to see the pressure plate stuff on that though, because
yeah, he's shifted. Isn't, even though he stops, he's not over on the right. He's already
right.
But he's stopping on his downswing. You could argue.
Right. Yeah, from a pressure standpoint,
part of
yes.
him, he's stopping on his actual downswing, not his backswing. He's just stopping the club.
I think Sandy Lyle experimented with that a little bit too for a little while. I think stopping halfway back, I think, a little bit.
He only ever went halfway back, didn't he?
Yes.
Wasn't much,
just past his hip and then crush it.
Absolutely. I love Sandy's swing because I just love the quirkiness of it. Blurring those lines between backswing and downswing, I think, are just absolutely key for trying to get better transitions, better movements. The more they can be blurred, the better. Let's talk about forces then. So think about forces of how you are pushing in the ground. So a simple idea of thinking about forces, if you stand up now or whenever you can and you try and jump in the air, you'll go down before you go up. You're going to create forces to release forces. And in the golf swing, we're doing the same thing. So the three forces that we generally measure on force plates, horizontal, so away from the target, towards the target, torque value. Think about pushing your feet, sliding them towards the ball and away from the ball, so out in front of you and back. There's shear forces as well that can be measured, which is kind of like twisting around themselves. And then you've got vertical forces. And one thing I noticed, which is really interesting with golfers, lots of golfers, is they actually create force. They've got some needle shifts in the ground. When we measure them on a plate, they are creating forces. They very rarely get the forces out at the right time, meaning if they're applying that force as the ball is being struck, then there's a good chance that force is not getting out onto the ball. So they're applying lots of force, but not getting any resulting speed out of the force that they use. That's a lot of words, and I know it sounds – is that a fair picture I've painted there? Does that make sense, guys?
Yeah, the timing matters of everything, right? And I know I've dealt with this a little bit when I went and saw Dr. Scott Lynn, and it was the first time I'd ever had a proper session on ground force. And it was eye-opening because there were some things in there that I didn't know I was doing. It had a vast effect on – a great effect on my ball striking, my speed generation, my efficiency, And the ability to change that and move that is really important and can really have a great effect on a person's ability to strike the ball with some power.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lou, it kind of makes sense, I'm sure, in your mind, if you're putting force in, you want the resulting energy out of that force. So you don't want that force to be being applied once the ball's gone or as it's going. You want it out onto that ball, I'm sure, makes sense in your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to hit that ball as far as I possibly can. I don't want to waste anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are going to waste it, I always think, why put it in? It's just, what's the point putting that? You might as well just hit it with one arm. If you're going to not use two, you might as well just use one. If you're going to limit yourself. Let's talk about some ideas. Go on, Lou. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I want to, before we get into some of the other stuff, I'm curious. We haven't talked at all about wrist angles.
Okay.
And do any of these things, what should amateur players, so our listeners, that you know, the 10 to 15s, the average player that's hitting it 220 off the tee, are there things that they should be thinking about with their wrist angles in the downswing that is potentially impacting speed that they are generating?
Yeah, they need to.
that might be an episode unto itself.
No, it's a good question. The word lag needs to disappear.
Yeah.
So the word lag, if the listeners understand what lag is, let's just redefine in your, like, you need to drop the ideas of lag. I have way more success with students with them releasing that angle as quick as possible than I would ever have with people putting that angle in. Your wrist. So to think of lag is so for people who are not sure what the word lag is about, which I'm sure most of you do listening, but if you don't, it's when the club is kind of lagging behind where the hands are on the way down. You get this kind of angle between lead arm and the club as it stays up behind you as the hand's pulling down. That image is so confused through two dimensions. I've done a video on this where I had I drew a three-dimensional right angle onto a two-dimensional video. And all I do is I tilt the three-dimensional right angle away from the camera. So in effect, as if the club was going down your back further behind you. And the lag angle appears to increase on that 2D image. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So if you choose to explain that a different way, right? I've talked about this with people before. If you were to just reach into the backswing and make a 90-degree angle from your arm with the club pointing straight up in the air, your arm is parallel to the ground, the club pointing straight up in the air, 90-degree angle, and just kind of turn and get into the top right there. If you were to make your swing, and you're looking at it from a face-on view, which is what you're talking about there. If you were to make that swing extremely flat, really, really flat, and really turn that club down and keep it at exactly that 90-degree angle, it's going to look way more than 90 degrees when you do that.
On a 2D and that's image,
Yeah, on a 2D image, and you know, in a video watching it.
And then you And then you go.
I've had conversations with my amateur friends about this, and they'll point. They'll show like you know Hogan video or something like that, and go, "Look at that! He's got yeah." And they're just so flat, and it looks like it's a lot more than it actually is. And you have other players that are really steep and are not flat like that. They may have similar angles, but they look very different in 2D.
Yeah, because then what you do with that analogy that you did there, Lou, which is great, is you then going out, you said when you're face on, you know, so you create this right angle, but you're face on to what? Because if I'm face on to your face, I'm at an angle to your hands. Does that make sense? If I put my lens, my sensor that captures that image face on, that generally means a student or a pro will line it up with where the ball is face on. But your arms in the position you're talking about aren't face onto that camera. They're now at about a 14 degree angle. So now that angle that you've talked about increases more. If you were completely face on to that angle that you talked about, it would make very little difference. But the trouble is face on moves because as the club comes down, well, face on now, that club's now at a different angle to that lens again. One of the biggest things you learn really quickly when you measure people is cameras only lie. When I used to teach with cameras and people used to say, oh, the camera never lies. The camera only lies. If you work with cameras and you try to express a story, an image, something through a camera, when you try to be precise with it, you'll realize pretty quick, oh my God, I can't do this because the camera sees two dimensions. Just a
the camera
direct,
also
line.
Makes it people also look adds 20
makes their legs look shorter.
And you know what it does? It also adds 20 pounds. Greg knows what I'm talking
about.
Here we
go
right?
with the weight jokes again. I'm getting. You guys got no mirrors in your house, I swear, honestly. You look like you look like a basket full of elbows and you're throwing stones at me.
two boiled eggs still in here.
Great.
Basket full of elbows.
Honestly.
But you're right, Lou. Lag is a term that needs to disappear. The reason lag needs to disappear is a really simple way of thinking about this for people at home. Just put your lead hand out in front of you and then see how far you can angle your wrist up. So really tilting it up. So thinking about trying to get into that 90-degree angle or increase it. Your
Still
range
much.
Of movement that way is really small. Now, if you cup your lead wrist or extend, now do it. Because the two bones in your forearms start to almost flip over, you've got forearm rotation kicks in, which means you could lag that forever. Guess what? If you extend your lead wrist, cup it for people, whatever
face
term you
open,
want to use.
Baby.
Oh, now people creating lag, guess what they do? Hit massive cuts. They hit massive
steep
cuts.
With the face
Hence,
open. Yeah.
Correct. Hence, I have so much more success with golfers trying to dump those angles out faster. They hit it further, they get better launches and what have you. So, yeah, great point, Lou. That's one that is it's killer. I'm amazed with the amount of online coaching. I've been doing it for years and I've beat this drum so hard that people are still getting this wrong. It really makes me sad that obviously the messages that online coaches get out aren't aligned better on this, because there are so many amateurs who get this so confused. And I think, where are they getting their info from? I don't know any credible teacher who has been teaching lag for the last God knows years. Like, it was dumped really quick from the clever people who were measuring. Let's talk about forces then, Greg. How was it for you trying to change the forces when you got on the plate with Dr. Scotland? Like you said, it was mind eye-opening. How easy or hard was it for you to manipulate the forces in the ground?
Yeah, so it was doable. I'll say this. So to give you the sort of the numbers on it, with a 6-iron, and it wasn't even driver, it was just a 6-iron, at the top of my backswing, I had 92% of my force on my back foot, right?
Wow.
Which is way too much, right? In turn, well, let me say this. Unless you
That's
get
the
a
most
lot
common
of it in
fault.
Yeah, it was. And so
with amateurs.
Yes. And it tied into, I feel very, and these are feelings. These aren't probably what happens, but I feel very lateral. I don't feel rotary,
totally.
Which matches up. I feel very hands. If I don't have perfect hands, I'm in trouble. I feel very hands dominant. Like I'm not, my hands have to be perfect through impact. Because I am throwing the hands or rotating the club. I don't know what I'm doing exactly, to be honest.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel, it doesn't feel great. So anyway, we worked with Dr. Scott, and immediately he said, let's try and keep some of that pressure in the ball of my lead foot as I rotate back into my backswing. So now it's, let's say, 80-20, which is a 12% difference, but it feels like 100% difference, right?
Yeah, that'll feel different, yeah.
And what happened is now at the top of my backswing, let's say, because we're defining that as when the club stopped moving.
Yeah, it changes direction.
Yes, I have quite a large amount of force in that lead foot that I can rotate and push out of. And imagine this, Dr. Scott, and he explained it to me. He said, I want you to feel like you're pushing your lead foot towards the line of the ball, right?
Yeah,
and so and that's basically my lead hip turning out of the way really well. Oh, man, this thing was amazing. I felt like I was swinging it. I felt way more rotation, strike improved, speed improved, efficiency was much better.
That's a key word there, definitely.
Yes. My smash factor with driver was 149s, 15s. Like, it was really cool stuff. Because my contact now went from a heel bias to a toe bias, and I'd much rather have that with driver, personally. Yeah. And so it was really an eye opening, and I can't wish for people enough to get the opportunity to get on this kind of technology if you get the chance. I know it can be difficult sometimes, but boy oh boy, it's eye-opening.
Yeah, it's game changing. When I first got my plates, what I did, which I found, and I do this with all the tech that I get, is so we're measuring horizontal, vertical, and torque forces. So three forces in the ground. I got on the plate and I just spent weeks, really, certainly hours over weeks, trying to move each force individually of each other. Because if I can't move them, how am I even going to begin to tell Greg how to move one, or Lou when he comes, or Bob or Jane, whoever comes for a lesson? If I haven't got some phrases in my little black book of saying, well, I tried this and it worked, let's see if it works on you, how am I ever going to do it? And what I started to learn really quickly is that I've never really thought about how I push in the ground. And when I started, that was eye-opening, which is what you're kind of hinting at, I think, Greg, there. Like, it's a whole new way of thinking about power, how to generate power and accuracy, because it moves your strike, as you said. The other thing was just how unaware I was of where everything was going when I thought I was. I thought, well, that's moving that there onto the trail, and that's moving that there, and that feels like I'm twisting more. And you'd look at the numbers, and it was no different.
Right.
So I had to really, really think outside of the box to get it to work. And anyone who watches my videos, and people remark on it, my swing physically looks so different. So the shape doesn't look different in the sense that, you know, the angles, the club's sitting back on, my grip has changed a little bit, and my face orientation has changed slightly. But the way my legs, and then in turn hips, shoulders, everything else will work, but you'll see it in the feet and around hips, it's hilarious how different it is. And I wish, again, I had this technology years and years ago. And that was just an effort for me to get the forces I was generating out at the right time. I was a classic, which we see loads of amateurs do. I create lots of vertical force. I think a vertical force is a jump. I jump. I create a lot of physical jump. Even if I don't leave the ground, even with my tidy swing, I have a good amount of vertical. But it was all happening. It was peaking, meaning the force was peaking that I generate as I hit the ball. I need to give you an idea, the world's stronger hitters peak their vertical force between their hands being around right shoulder and trail hip, somewhere in between there. So the club's nowhere near hitting the ball where they're peaking their verticals. I was peaking mine as I was hitting the ball, meaning I create a big mountain of force, but none of it was out onto the ball. I was actually, so another way of thinking about this, because I know it gets quite technical, think about jumping. I was hitting the ball while I was still pushing down to jump. I hadn't even jumped up yet. And then as the ball goes, I was then jumping up. What's the point in jumping? It's not doing anything.
Right.
That energy's not getting on the ball. So the way I was able to get that energy out earlier, and when I work with students, the way you get that energy out earlier is sorting out the order of the backswing, because basically your downswing is starting. This is what blew my mind the most. I started to change my downswing as I started my takeaway by using the plates. So the way I moved my pressures in my backswing, as soon as I stumble, this is even madder. I actually, if you break it down, I started to change my downswing before I started my backswing, because I would have a massive shift left, which I never used to have as much. I'm 100% lead foot as I start my backswing. And that's because I want to get loads right early to then get back left. So I just moved all my movements like so much earlier to get them to come out at the right time. And as I work with students, that's the thing I notice. You just cannot get them to think about moving that force early enough. It's so much fun to work with students on it, because there is so much you can do with them that they've never tried, that just you just gain like crazy gains in ability to hit target and to create energy, basically.
Absolutely. Mark, can I just touch on one thing there that you were talking about? I think one of the things that I really enjoyed doing and found it much easier was when I worked on the plates, I did it once we figured out what I needed to work on. I did it without a golf club. I just did it rotating and changing force. And so then I kind of jumped off the plates myself at home, and I was like, this is the move we were making to trying to tap into that feeling. Just the lower half moving in a fashion that move those pressures how we want. I would make a swing basically with my shoulders, my hands crossed across my shoulders, still making a turn, but without a golf club. I found that really advantageous in figuring out what to do.
Absolutely. That's a good way. You're identifying feelings and then trying to apply them.
Yes, because ultimately I've got to get somewhere where there's no machine. Right.
Your safety net's going to go at some point. Yes. And you need to still be able to do it, don't you? A great drill for people to think about using the ground in a vertical way differently, which I do with lots of students, stand with your feet together with like a mid iron, like an 8-iron. So literally they can be like, 2 inches apart if you want, but pretty much together. Make a backswing. As you make your backswing, feel as you're finishing the direction of the club. So as in it's completing its backswing to then start down. So the change of direction of the physical club. As it's changing direction, try and push down, like bend your knees, go down, push everything down. And then as you come in at the ball and before, try and jump up. See how early you have to think about jumping and how it doesn't affect your strike in a negative way. You do this drill with people and they jump late. Like they make their backswing, they're halfway through their downswing, they start pushing down, they hit the ball and then they kind of jump up. You say, no, why don't you try earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier? And what people start articulating back to you is they feel, they don't do this because they do unweight on the way back, but they feel like they're starting to push down. So that little down before the jump, as the club is getting about halfway on the way back of their backswing. So it's like, right, so for you to trigger a downswing feeling, you have to be doing it, on your backswing. And it's that really opens their eyes. They're like, wow. Like,
I'm going to try that.
Yeah, it's really good. It works. It's amazing how early you can get your jump going and you rip it. Like, I can hit a 7-arm feet together, not far off the same distance as a feet apart. If I put the jump in, it's the same distance. It just is. Wow. It takes a lot more energy. So why would I do? I'd use my whip for stance to help me. But it's amazing.
Molinari was doing this for a while. jumping while he was at Nines. I remember watching him on the
range. James Ridyard was working on it with him, I think. I spoke to him a little bit. He doesn't seem to be doing it as much at the moment. And I hope he's not run away, because obviously he was. I hope he's not run. Like, you do see this with pros, they run away because they get scared of things going wrong a little bit because it's public for them. Matt Kuchar's a great example. He was on the plates, the Swing Catalyst plates, and Scotland got him like 15, 20 yards extra distance, and that's what he wanted. And then he hooked one. And Kuchar hates hooking it. Goes left. He hates it. Yeah, and that was over. Done.
Yeah.
I'll go back to being 14 yards short. I can't have it going left. And he was like, it was one shot. He literally just ran away.
I'll eat one shot, one hook, because I hit plenty of them. For an extra 14 yards any day.
exactly. Lou, I know you've got some experience with, what's the board called for these kind of ideas of getting pressures out? We've talked about it in the backswing issue as well, in the backswing episode. What's it called?
Yeah, it's called the downshift board. And I think, you know, when you're trying to learn or refine movements in the golf swing, and, you know, this episode's downswing, previous one was about backswing. A lot of it, we talked about pressures and shifting pressures around. Exaggerating movements is really important to help drive home some of these changes. And the downshift board is a simple device that helps you get some exaggerated feels on a lot of the things that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And exaggerating these feels, exaggerating these movements will help to transform what is going on in your golf swing. If you are just trying to make simple changes in your golf swing and you do a move that feels extremely different, and then you look at it on video compared to your normal swing, you're probably not going to tell much of a difference, if any at all, in video. Whereas, you know, over-exaggerating these moves goes a long way to making actual changes to your swing. And something like the downshift board is great for understanding pressures and what you can do in backswing and in downswing and how all of these should move around, and give amateur players some of the feelings that they typically, you know, don't have or not experiencing. So actually, down in the show notes, we have a code down there. You can get a discount on this using this code. So I, if you've never been on one of these, I encourage you to give it a shot. It will help you to cement some of these feels, which is going to translate to better pressure movement in the swing, which is going to translate to more distance.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I just want to give another little drill for people who are playing with this. It is a bit of a backswing and downswing drill, but anyone who's listened to the backswing episode and now the downswing episode, the more I can get you to blur your backswing and downswing and think about blurring the movements, I think it's so much better for golfers. What I want you to do, you can just, if you're at home, do this now, just get a feeling, don't need a club, and you can hit balls this way. Start with ready to hit a golf ball, both feet on the ground. And all I want you to do is pick your trail heel in the air. So you can have your trail toes down, but your heel up, lead foot, everything down. Start the backswing, slam the trail heel down. So as you start the backswing, slam the trail heel down and lift the lead heel. So you've basically switched as you started your backswing. And then as you start the pull down, and just before, hopefully, as you complete the backswing, slam the heel down of your lead foot as your trail heel starts to come up to go into your follow-through position. You do this movement with students, they gain distance. I did this with a French coach years ago who was doing some work with Under Armour, and he was working with plates, and they were studying how shoes make a difference and what have you. And he got me to do this drill, and I just instantly hit it further, like straight away. I couldn't control it very easily. I went and played Pebble Beach literally like 2 days after this lesson. I didn't play so well because I was trying this thing. But it's a great way of getting the feelings of torque values and pressure shifts in your backswing and downswing, which you should be blurring. Use that. Honestly, it really helps people. And guess what? If you struggle with your chipping, I know this is a – use it with your chipping. I use that with people with chipping, Greg. You should use it for anyone you use. Anyone's dodgy with chipping, it's so good to get them rotating more in their hips when they've got a small swing. So, free tips. You even get free. You get discount codes in show notes. You get Ultimate Series. You get loads of body proportion chat, like arguably too much.
Arguably too much.
Too much.
and you get free tips, like, which aren't even to do with distance. Like, if you're not subscribed to this pod, I don't know what you're doing. Apart from me giving you the shirt off my back, I don't know what else I can do. You're just handing knowledge out free here. There we go. Ultimate distance downswing. Are we happy? I think we're helping, aren't we?
Always happy.
Yeah. Lou wants to finish quick so he can go off in his room and start practicing all these tips.
I'm going to do the jump for sure.
Yeah, do that. It's really good. It does for verticals. And what it does is it removes horizontals. Lots of amateurs have a lot of horizontal force because they're like swaying around. So basically, we were going to finish, but I can't not say this one thing, which is, I think, so important to understand ground forces. And it's a Dr. Scott Lynn steal. So thanks, Scott, for sharing this with us. Basically, you've got three forces. You know, you're going away from the target to the target, horizontal, vertical jumps, and then you've got torque. Doesn't matter how you use these, you just got to balance them all. So if you use a lot of horizontal, but you get more power from using a vertical, a jump, getting your feet together removes the horizontal, certainly reduces it. So we take some of that energy away from horizontal and we give it to the verticals, which might be your power source. So it's about finding your power sources, which is important,
dude,
and then getting the most out of it.
Gonna,
so that's why it works so well.
You're not going to believe the elevation. I'm going to post a video. This is going to be...
Oh, you're going to be like Jordan.
I'm going to be so high. It's a joke.
Yeah, you'll be legs splitting, dunking.
I'll have time to do a somersault up there after contact. It's going to be awesome.
Absolutely. There we go. The ultimate guide to gaining distance. Check out all the other episodes. Let us know if you're enjoying the episodes. Let us know if you want any other series that you're struggling and you want us to cover in full and give it the ultimate guide treatment. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.